Welcome back to The Drive on ESPN Blacksburg, AM 1430, FM 94.1. We're now joined in studio by Chris Coleman from TechSideline.com. Chris, thank you for joining us.
No problem. How you guys doing?
Doing well. It's been a pretty eventful week. Some good news and some bad news as far as Virginia Tech athletics is concerned. And I first wanted to ask you this. Regarding the C.J. Revis situation, do you think he's gone for good?
You know, that's a good question. I know they have an appeal process that they're going to go through. I don't anticipate him playing for Virginia Tech this year. I'm not going to rule out the future yet, but I don't think it'll happen this year.
Now, with him gone, how does that set up the rest of the secondary? Is there kind of a domino effect with that?
Yeah, there potentially could be. Virginia Tech normally recruits pretty versatile defensive backs that can play multiple positions, so you could potentially see some flip-flopping back there. But right now, I think the job would be Desmond Fries to lose. He's played Rover in the past. He was in a pretty good competition with CJ for it back in the spring, and I think he's had two good springs in a row. So I'd feel confident with Desmond Fry in there. And if it turns out to be Desmond Fry, then I don't think anybody else will have to switch positions or anything like that. So that's the best-case scenario. Worst-case scenario is Fry doesn't play well there the spring, and then you have to start moving people around. Maybe you have to take a look at Donovan Riley at Rover, and in which case, who would play free safety? That would be Chuck Clark would be playing free safety then, but then if he's moved to free safety, then who would play nickel? So yeah, then there could potentially be a domino effect, but as long as Desmond Fry locks it down, I don't think there will be.
Now, as far as the Rover spot goes, how important is that in Bud Foster's defense?
Yeah, you know, it's an important position. It's the short side safety. A lot of times when Virginia Tech goes with their eight-man front looks, it'll be the Rover up around the line of scrimmage, kind of acting like an extra linebacker. Kyshawn Jarrett was very good in that role because he was a very good tackler, very physical player, and I think C.J. Revis would have excelled in that role too, plus add a little extra athleticism to it. So it's a critical position, particularly in run support on the short side of the field.
Now, we recently heard that Tim Settle, the four-star recruit, or depending on which recruiting service you look
right
at, be a five-star or four-star recruit, has gotten through and will be a Hokie. What do you think they should do with him? Redshirt him? Try to play him right away? Where do you come in on that angle?
Oh, the good thing is, you know, he's a very talented player, and he's going to be physically ready to play as soon as he gets here. But it's also good that Virginia Tech has five quality defensive tackles on the team right now, so they don't have to play him this year. They have the luxury of redshirting him if they choose. I'm in a wait-and-see mode with that. He's a guy who struggled to qualify, had to turn it on in the last year, so you would kind of like to let him get adjusted to the academics of college life before you put him on the field. But at the same time, if he's good enough to play, it would be hard to keep him off the field. But let's say he could potentially beat out Ricky Walker and maybe be the number four defensive tackle or something like that, then Ricky Walker didn't redshirt last year. You could redshirt Ricky Walker in that case. So there's plenty of options to go around. It's a lot better than dealing with options when, like in some years in the past, Virginia Tech only had three good defensive tackles, and you're sitting there thinking, oh gosh, what are they going to do? What if they have an injury? There's depth problems. Well, this is a different kind of problem, and it's a good problem to have.
Do you think Tim Settle is going to be a 4 or 5 year kind of guy, or do you see him possibly leaving after, you know, three?
You know, I think he has that kind of physical ability. I really do. You can never predict development or anything like that, but if I had to guess, I think he'll play this year, and I do think he's an NFL guy.
Now, as far as Settle is concerned, okay, and I mentioned the recruiting rankings. I know ESPN had him as a five-star recruit and I think a top 20 player, while Rivals and 24/7 or somebody else had him as a four-star recruit and like between 160 and 170. Do you have any reason why there's that disparity between ESPN and some of the other services out there?
A lot of schools backed off him when they thought he wasn't going to qualify. He had a huge early offer list. I mean, Alabama, Florida State, Tennessee, Clemson, pretty much everybody offered Tim Settle early. And he even said it today in an interview in the Washington Post that a lot of schools stopped contacting him after they thought he wasn't going to qualify. And I think once all those schools backed off, your recruiting services lowered his rankings. And when you consider ESPN, I don't consider ESPN a recruiting service. They're more of a scouting service. That they're not really reliant on coaching staffs and things like that to get information and stuff. I think they ranked him there at the very beginning based on what they saw on film, and they weren't going to change it no matter what. And I think that's how ESPN rolls. With the recruiting services, it could be a little bit different. But the thing is, he's still a higher level four-star. I've always thought there were too many four-star recruits. I mean, let's say in general there are 25 five-star recruits, and that number 26 guy is a four-star player. But you can also go back to the number 280, 290 guy is also a four-star player, and people have a tendency to lump those guys together, and then that's not even the case. I mean, a guy like David Wilson, who went to Virginia Tech, he was a top 35 national recruit and an elite prospect. But people lumped him together with the number 279 recruit in the country because they both had four stars next to their name. So I've always been an advocate. I think the star system needs to be cleaned up a little bit. There's not enough difference in perception between those lower-ranked four-star guys and the higher-ranked four-star guys.
I guess the same thing could be said for three-star guys as well. I mean, there's so many three-stars out there that there's that, I mean, that drop-off from the four-star to the three-star, and then I don't know how many three-stars there are, but probably, what, 150, 200?
I would say more than that. Yeah. I think probably the most recruits are three-stars. Notice there's no one-stars.
Right, yeah. It just goes from...
If you get a scholarship offer, you're automatically given two stars. So, yeah, but you don't want to hurt anybody's feelings by putting one star next to their name, I guess, these days. But, you got to take the rankings with a grain of salt. To me, what I look at when I judge success or fail for a recruiting class is, you know, did Virginia Tech close on enough of their top targets? And I really don't care if their top targets are three-star guys or five-star guys. I trust the Virginia Tech coaching staff as far as their evaluations goes. I just want them to get, you know, a good percentage of their top targets to make the team consistently competitive and build depth.
Now, I'm asking like five or six Tim Settle questions, but I'm just intrigued by the guy. What makes him such a good defensive tackle, separating him from some of the other defensive tackle recruits in the 2015 class?
You know, Virginia Tech normally has these short, squatty defensive tackles that enroll that are around 275, 280 pounds, sometimes even smaller than that, and they're anywhere from 6 feet to 6'1", 6'2", you know, one gap defensive tackles. Tim Settle is different in the fact that he could play nose guard in a 3-4. He's that big, but he's also athletic enough to be a one gap defensive tackle in Virginia Tech's system. And that you just don't see a lot of guys his size with his athleticism. And that's why he's a very, very unique recruit. And in particular, a unique recruit to Virginia Tech because it represents a different type of body and a different type of athlete that we've ever had at defensive tackle.
We're talking to Chris Coleman from TechSideline.com, and Chris will keep you on through the break. And then I definitely want to hit on Marshawn Williams and Tyrone Outlaw as well. There's a couple other things that I want to get to. You're listening to The Drive on ESPN Blacksburg, AM 1430, FM 94.1. Welcome back to The Drive with Kevin Weiss on ESPN Blacksburg, AM 1430, FM 94.1. We've got Chris Coleman from TechSideline.com in studio. And Chris, I recently saw where Marshawn Williams, he did an interview with the Hokie Sports website saying that he was about 80 to 85%. And we got some people were tweeting us back and forth yesterday on what to do with him, whether to redshirt him or play him. And we might have asked you this last week, but I just wanted to kind of bring it up again. What do you think they should do with Marshawn Williams if he says he's 80 to 85%?
I think you take it on a day-to-day basis. If he's not 100%, you know, at some point during August, I would lean towards redshirting him. You keep him ready and everything like that in case one of your top two or three guys goes down. But a problem Virginia Tech has run into in the past is I think at times they've tried to play too many running backs, and I think that's hurt the rhythm of the offense. It doesn't let any of those backs get into a rhythm. So I would personally try to redshirt him this year if I could. Because I just think the more backs you have, if you're trying to get them all reps, it doesn't help the overall offense, in my opinion. And you know, plus he's still a young player. He's only a true sophomore. No reason to risk his future just over an ACL. But you know, I'm not a doctor. So,
right.
So, but from a team perspective, just the way I look at it, I think I would probably try to redshirt him this year. And if something happened to Trey or JC, you know, I would keep him getting reps in practice and keep him ready if they had to pull the redshirt. But, you know, right now I'd go ahead and sit him. There's no reason to toy with his future like that.
Is it worth us having a number one back and then a number two and then kind of a rotation that way?
Yeah, I mean, I think you would ideally like to say, okay, here's our stud running back who's going to get 70% of the carries, and then your number two running back is going to get 30% of the carries, and then really nobody else gets any carries at all. I mean, I think that's the ideal situation. I don't think we're going to see that this year. I think you're on paper right now. I think Trey and JC are even atop the depth chart with Trayvon McMillan number three, and Shane Beamer has shown a tendency to, you know, split up his running back carries quite a bit or create packages for guys like Chris Mangus in the past. So I'm not sure how they're going to handle it this year. I think their options are more limited this year because of the players that are hurt and or suspended. But I'm not so sure that's not a good thing for the overall offense, and I really think it potentially could be.
Same thing for Cy McKenzie. Redshirt him if you can.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. And I would probably go ahead and suspend him for the year. I mean, he's got sentenced to jail. I mean, there's got to be some kind of punishment there. I mean, besides the indefinite suspension while the court process was going on. So, I think I go ahead and suspend him for a year. You can treat that as a redshirt year. Make sure everything's 100%. Get his mind right. Make it very clear to him that behavior like that is unacceptable. I would probably try to redshirt both of those guys. But we'll see. I mean, if Marshawn comes out and tears it up in August and he looks like he's one of the best two backs, then you got to play him.
Now, I saw this, and this isn't really Virginia Tech related, but it kind of ties in. I saw some discussion about it on the message boards and everything. But Gus Malzahn went out and said he called Will Muschamp, his defensive coordinator, the best defensive mind in football. And a lot of people were out there saying, well, you know, have you ever heard of Bud Foster before? Are you familiar with Bud Foster and things like that? And just wanted to get your perspective on it. Do you think Bud Foster is the best defensive mind in football, or he's just right up there in that top of the class?
I think when you look at the results, I'm not inside Muschamp's head, so I can't say whether he has the best mind or not. But when you look at on-field results, Bud Foster has the best on-field results of any defensive coordinator in the country. So I think you could certainly make the argument that he has the best defensive mind. I think he's a master of in-game adjustments. He tweaks his scheme to a certain extent based on his personnel. I mean the double eagle front he had installed for Ohio State last year was brilliant, and Urban Meyer, who's a brilliant offensive coach, could never adjust to it in the middle of the game. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it's Bud, but I'm a little bit biased.
There's something, I think it was Andy Bitter put out something about the injury bug that has ravaged the football team a little bit last year. But and I think Joe and I were talking about this, not necessarily on air, but we're having this conversation where I think, Joe, you said something along the lines of, it seems like over the past couple years, there's been injuries that have really hit the program hard, more than you would think with other programs. Yeah. And if there's some kind of trend with that, if there's something going wrong with the athletic training or whatever it may be, I mean, is there any theory or insight why there's been so many injuries over the years?
You know, that is one theory, and some people on our boards have brought that up. And I don't know enough about medicine or training to know that. But I do think it might be worth bringing in an outside consultant specialist to do a thorough review of the program. I mean, I don't see the harm that could do. If nothing's wrong, then great. But if something's wrong, I'd rather fix the problem than let it keep going on. So that's something I would take into account if I were running things right now. Or it could just be bad luck. It could simply just be bad luck, because the last couple of years have been pretty devastating from an injury standpoint, particularly last year. And, you know, it's not just the number of injuries, it's the key injuries. You know, both those freshman backs last year, Ryan Malik last year going down was a huge loss to the offense. Brewer was healthy for one game last year, and that was the first one. So there's just been so many like that. Kyle Fuller 2 years ago was pretty devastating to the defense. So, you know, there could be something to that theory. But not being knowledgeable at all when it comes to medicine and injuries, I don't know. But I do think it would be worth having an outside specialist do some kind of review. I think that could only help.
since they have such depth issues, saving a consultant, saving that happening, would you suggest they do things like shorten practices or maybe not have so many, you know, intense scrimmages or something of that nature to keep their guys healthy?
No, I don't think you shorten them anymore. They've already been shortened quite a bit, not just at Virginia Tech, but throughout college football over the last 10 years as more and more guys have been getting hurt. I don't know if it's a fact that, you know, players are bigger these days, so they're harder hits, which is leading to more injuries, or guys are just coddled a little bit more than they used to be back in the day. I remember when I played football in high school one time, we had some NFL players come to our school over the summer, and it was about between 95 and 100 degrees in July, and it was humid, and I got lightheaded and dizzy and felt like I was about to pass out, and I about fell out, and they put an ice pack on the back of my neck. I sat down for about 10 minutes, drank some water, and was back in there 10 or 15 minutes later. Jeez. These days, they would have hooked me up to the IV and taken me to the hospital.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, just from a precautionary standpoint. So, if anything, I would be more physical, but I'm old school.
I saw this. We talked to Phil Steele yesterday, and he made a point about special teams improving, how that could really help the team this season, and how special teams had fallen off the past couple years. Where do you stand on how special teams could perform this season?
It got better last year. It was pretty bad 2 years ago, but it got better in almost all phases last year, with the one exception being kickoff return. You know, punting was pretty good. Punt return was above average. Kickoff coverage was excellent. Punt coverage was excellent. It's just, I think they had some personnel issues with their kickoff return last year. Once they got Dimitri Knowles out of there, I think they gave themselves better options, and we saw Darion Green in the ball game have a big return that set up that field goal right before halftime. The thing about Dimitri Knowles is he's got great speed, so he's capable of breaking one like he did against North Carolina when he's a freshman, but there never seems to be any in-between with him. He either gets stopped after a 15-yard gain, which is pretty bad for a kickoff return, or he can break something big. So you gotta consider what you want as a coach if you're coaching the kickoff return team. Do you want the guy back there who has the best chance to hit a big play, or do you want the guy back there who can get you between 20 and 25 yards most consistently but might not make the big play? I think you kind of try to find a balance. I think Trayvon McMillian will get a look back there this year. I really think he deserves a look, and he could help the team in that situation.
All right, to change things up a little bit, I've got a quick basketball question regarding Tyrone Outlaw. I think you actually did the reporting. You did the research on if he was enrolled
yeah,
or not.
Yeah, some real deep research right there. Go to vt.edu and type in his name.
See, I never would have thought of that. See, at the University of South Florida, I don't know. I mean, can you do that at every school?
I don't know.
I know you could search faculty where I was, but I can't remember searching.
I would think the public schools you could.
Yeah, okay. You would think so. And I'm sure they give you an option when you're filling out some sheet to keep it private if you want to.
Right. But, well, as far as he's concerned, what does he bring to the table for the basketball team?
He's a guy who can contribute immediately. He's actually 1-0 in Castle Coliseum in his career when his UNC Greensboro team upset Tech a couple of years ago. he can shoot the ball with range. I've heard he's a really tough kid. And he's really hard worker. Like he believed when he was playing at UNC Greensboro that he needed to be playing at a higher level. So rather than just transferring directly to another school, he went to junior college, and he had a huge year. I mean, just averaged over 21 points per game and just raised his profile. And he always had confidence that he was better than the level he was playing at. And I like that in a player. So, and he's always wanted to play in the ACC. So I think he's going to come in and contribute immediately, and I think he'll start some games for Virginia Tech this year. Buzz generally doesn't have set starting lineups. It just depends on who works the hardest in practice that week or whatever. But, you know, he's going to be one of the main cogs in Virginia Tech's rotation this year, in my opinion. And he'll be a guy who's big enough and strong enough, I think, to finish around the rim, but he's also a good three-point shooter, a little over 40% from out there. So he's kind of a dual threat from that perspective.
Speaking of Buzz's team, how do you think it looks going forward, not just this year, but maybe next year as well?
Yeah, they're going to have a lot more depth. No question about that. I mean, this past season, what, they have 8 or 9 scholarship players, and Christian Beyer was their best center, and he was 6'6". I mean, they didn't have much to work with in there. But now they have 2 centers, and Johnny Hamilton and Satchel Pierce, or is it Yeah, Satchel Paige. I want to keep wanting to call him Satchel Paige. Yeah, but that is his middle name, so I wouldn't be wrong. But yeah, so and I think their skill sets complement each other pretty well. One is a back to the basket guy, the other is more of an athletic shot blocker, defender type. Plenty of depth on the wing, and now they've got their experienced, talented point guard who was an all ACC player in Maryland. So I think they're setting up pretty well for the next 2 years. I think the goal is to be an NCAA tournament team next year. I think there should be enough talent, depth, and experience on the team to make the NCAA tournament next season. Not this coming season, but the next year.
So you've been pretty satisfied with what he's done on the recruiting trail since he's gotten here?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't see how you couldn't be. I mean, he brought two of his top recruits from Marquette, signed a good class this past year, including the number one player in the state. And he's done everything expected of him so far, except win. But nobody was going to win with the group of players he put on the court last year. I mean, they really needed to rebuild that talent level, and he's done that. So from here on out, he's got to start winning. That's the next step. He's rebuilt the talent level. Now you got to start winning.
So do you see this as maybe an NIT team next year?
I don't know.
Maybe at least winning like five games in conference?
Yeah, you know, it's harder to make the NIT these days because it's not 40 teams anymore. Plus, all those smaller conference teams that win their conference regular season title but lose in the tournament, they're guaranteed a spot in the NIT these days. So really, you've got to win 21 games to make the NIT these days. You could get in there. I think there were maybe two teams from power conferences with 18 wins this past year that made the NIT. It used to be you could make it with 16 wins. I think Virginia Tech made it after the 2004 season with a 15-14 record, and that's just not going to happen these days. So I think these days it's NCAA tournament or bust. Mm-hmm. I would certainly take an NIT this year. I think it'd be a positive step forward, but I think that's a really hard tournament to make this year. I think it's pretty much it's kind of pushing the power conference programs out of it. I don't see what that does for TV ratings, but it is what it is.
We're talking to Chris Coleman from TechSideline.com. We'll come to him for a third segment. You're listening to The Drive with Kevin Weiss on ESPN Blacksburg, AM 1430, FM 94.1. Welcome back to The Drive with Kevin Weiss on ESPN Blacksburg, AM 1430, FM 94.1. We're joined in studio by Chris Coleman from TechSideline.com, at Chris Coleman TSL. Chris, are you a golf fan at all, or not really?
I'm certainly not a fan of things I'm not good at, and I tried the driving range one time, and let's just say I never need to convert to the golf course, but I've heard that Spieth guy's really something to watch.
Yeah, well, as far as the driving range, that I go out there today, I'm going to be shanking pretty much everything, but yeah, he's pretty special. Okay, this Wayne Davis choosing Ohio State over Virginia Tech. What's the inside on why he chose OSU over VT?
I don't think Tech was as high on him as some others. I wish they still would have taken him for 757 recruiting purposes and perception out there. You know, Torian Gray is very specific with what kind of defensive backs he likes to take. And I don't think he was a big fan of Davis's. It just didn't seem like they recruited him all that hard. And probably Torian Gray had more evaluations of him than anybody, being an in-state guy. That being said, I still think he's good enough where he potentially could work out. And it's going to look bad if Virginia Tech doesn't sign a top 10 in-state recruit this year, or only signs one top 10 in-state recruit. And I would like to see them keep the momentum going forward in the 757, and I'm sure Brian Steinspring probably would too. So from that standpoint, I really wish they had taken him.
Now, as far as Davis goes, Torian Gray not being a fan, would it be like his height, size, measurables?
That could be. I had heard that he didn't play particularly well at a couple of camps back in May, or maybe it was April, and that could have something to do with it. Maybe word about that got out. I think his film is good, but it could be the height thing. He's not a very big guy. If you look at his neck, he actually looks more like a strong safety or something like that. But when his stature, he's kind of a corner. So I don't know. I think he's kind of a tweener. There might not be a spot for him. And Torian likes bigger corners these days. He likes taller guys. I mean, if you look at all the defensive backs that Virginia Tech brought in last year, they're all 6 foot or taller. You look at the best defensive backs on the current team. Revis was 6'1" before he kind of got booted or whatever. And then Fuller and Chuck Clark are 6 feet. and the corners they signed in 2015 are 6 feet. So I think Torian's leaning towards bigger defensive backs these days, versatile defensive backs that can play multiple positions. When you recruit a 5'9 guy, he's not going to be able to play multiple positions most likely.
Now, as far as recruiting in the state goes, I mean, compared to the past, you know, 10, 15 years, is there more talent in the state today, or is it about the same, or is it kind of difficult to say?
It's difficult to say. I think there might be a little bit more, but I think Virginia Tech's success throughout the 90s and 2000s has led to other programs coming in to recruit the state of Virginia more. Right. I mean, I guess I go back to the 1995 class this is the last time Virginia Tech didn't sign a top 10 player from the state of Virginia. And five of those players in the top 10 of the state that year went to the NFL, and at least two others went on to become major college contributors. So I think the talent has been in the state for a while. Virginia Tech, I mean, a guy like James Anderson, when Virginia Tech signed him, he was the number 26 player in the state, according to the Roanoke Times. Well, these days, he would be in the top 10 in the state because all these camps exist. And they didn't exist back when he was recruited. He'd be going to these summer camps, and these evaluators would get to see him run, and then he'd be going to team-specific camps, and the coaches would see him run, and just like that, his stock would rise. I'd be willing to bet that James Anderson would be a four-star recruit today, and he was your sleeper of the year in Virginia back in 2001 or 2002. I think it was 2001 when he signed with the Hokies. So, I think the recruiting game has changed to a certain extent. I think players are from Virginia are rated higher than they used to be. Maybe the talent level has gone up a little bit, but I just think overall the state gets more respect than it used to, and I think a lot of that is because the fact that Virginia Tech won so many games with mostly Virginia players throughout the years.
Do you think recruits look at this as a top 25 program now, especially guys from the state?
I'm not sure they care. I mean, you see all these guys talking about, oh, if I go to this school, they put a lot of these guys in the NFL. Or if I go to this school, you know, I'll get developed better. Or I'm real comfortable with the coaches at this school. Obviously, the best programs are going to recruit the best players in general. But, man, Virginia, because of their bad offense, Virginia Tech has just became a really boring team to watch. Yeah. Over, you know, if you look at the last 10 years of Virginia Tech football, 2006 offense was bad. 2007 offense was bad. 2008 offense was bad. And then the last three offenses have been bad. Six out of the last 10 years, Virginia Tech's offense has been bad. And when I mean bad, I mean downright terrible to watch. I mean, imagine if you're Josh Sweat, you're turning on watching the Virginia Tech-Wake Forest game. And then you watch the Florida State game later.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just boring. And I think that it just led neutral parties to just stop watching. I mean, it led some fans to stop watching. So I think that's a big part of it. So score some points, and even our defensive recruiting will improve if you can score some points, because people will start watching again. We'll be a more exciting team to watch. We'll be a more exciting brand.
So do you see Virginia Tech being shut out of the top 10 prospects in the state?
It depends on who you think the top 10 prospects are.
Right,
right now, they're probably going to be shut out on the Sports Wars list, which is the company that owns TSL and the Sabre. I think in 247's top 10, they have one recruit, and in Rivals' top 10, they have one recruit. So I think it's a possibility. I think Reggie Floyd and Eric Kuma are top 10-ish type players. I think you could easily make an argument for putting both of those guys in there. But the fact of the matter is, you know, between 1998 and 2012, Virginia Tech averaged, I think it was over four top 10 recruits per year. They were signing over 40% of the top 10 prospects from the state of Virginia. And 2013, 2014, 2015, and now into 2016, I think the average has dropped to 1.75 or thereabouts. And that's not good.
No. Do you think a little bit of that could be, and I know this is a touchy subject, but with Frank Beamer, the longer he stays on, you know, it's difficult to go to a recruit's house and say, okay, I'm going to be your coach for the next 4 to 5 years, 5 years if you're redshirt.
Yeah.
Especially if, you know, every year that Beamer stays on, it almost seems like that's a way that other programs can almost recruit against Virginia Tech in that sense, saying, you know, you really think you might want to, you know, you might want to play for Frank Beamer, but do you really think he's going to stay on for 4 or 5 years from now?
Yeah, that's part of it. Another thing is, you know, his assistant coaches. I mean, look at a guy like Landon Dickerson, and we've got a source that's pretty close to Landon Dickerson's recruitment. He's the top offensive lineman on Virginia Tech's board, and he's really tight with Stacey Searles. He loves Stacey Searles. Searles is his favorite offensive line coach. If he comes to Virginia Tech, it's going to be because of Stacey Searles. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? If he comes to Virginia Tech, I really doubt Stacey Searles is going to be his offensive line coach over the 4 or 5 years of his career. And I'm pretty sure Landon Dickerson knows that, too. If we were recruiting Landon Dickerson 5 years ago with Stacey Searles, then I think he would have already committed to Virginia Tech by now. But I don't think – I would bet my car that we don't get Landon Dickerson this year but because of that. And that's going to impact certain recruits. I heard that, you know, Eric Kuma had questions for the staff regarding the future, and they told him that they had a plan in place, and that was good enough for him, and he committed to Virginia Tech. But for other guys, it's not going to be good enough for. And I think that's going to be one of the reasons we're going to lose Landon Dickerson. So that has been an issue, and it will continue to be an issue.
Well, can that change at all without getting rid of a lot of these coaches?
That can't change until there's a new head man, because you know, I think the assistant coaches are somewhat handicapped with their ability to recruit. I mean, how can you, if you're Stacey Searles, you got to look that kid in the eye and say, we have a plan. But yeah, what is the plan? You know, but Stacey doesn't even know what the plan is. He's not the athletic director. So it's just, it's tough to overcome. Changing assistants won't do it, because they'll just be fighting the same battle. That's going to be an issue that we'll have to deal with until Frank retires.
Yeah.
All right, kind of a fun question here. You guys are doing a great series, the favorite Virginia Tech players.
Yeah.
And now, personally for you, who's your favorite Virginia Tech player and why?
Oh, man. That's a really good question. I think probably Wyatt Teller is my favorite player. I just love the way he plays the game, how aggressive he is. I very rarely, like, quote, fall in love with a recruit.
Right.
But I really wanted to get Wyatt Teller because I thought he was the perfect fit here. I thought he would bring some toughness into this program that was badly needed. And so he's probably my favorite. I would also make strong cases for J.C. Coleman, Chuck Clark, Trey Edmonds, and Daddy Nicholas. That's probably my top five. But, you know, Sam Rogers is creeping around there too. So there's plenty to choose from. There's a lot of likable guys on this team. Hopefully everybody can stay healthy this year and they can win a lot of games, because I think this would be one of our more popular teams if they did that.
And another one I've got for you. Okay, Braxton Miller said he was the best athlete in the country, best college football athlete, that is. For Virginia Tech, who do you think is the best athlete on the team?
The best athlete?
Pound for pound.
Pound for pound. As far as running ability and things like that.
Like a guy, if he was to compete in the NFL Combine, would just be better than everybody else on the Hokies roster.
Oh man, that's a great question.
Maybe Nicholas or
I would probably say Daddy. He would do well in the running drills and the agility drills and you know, the vertical and things like that. I'm not sure how we would do in the lifting drills. So I don't know if there's like a complete package. I would probably say Wyatt Teller. I think he's an excellent athlete for an offensive lineman, and he can lift a house. I think if the NFL scouts came in here and put all our players through an NFL combine, I think Wyatt Teller would win. If he had came up with some kind of a grading system to judge all the lifts, all the runs, everything like that, I think Wyatt Teller would win.
All right, very cool. Well, Chris, we appreciate you coming in studio and giving us your insight as always. You guys have anything special for Tech Sideline coming up the next week or so?
We're going to finish off our favorite player series. Let's get to the time of the year where you kind of run out of things to write about, and you're just ready for practice to start so you can actually start talking about what you see.
And you're going to be at ACC Media Days, right?
I'm not going to go down there.
Oh, man.
Yeah. You know, they send two players and Frank down there. I'm supposed to come up with 3 days of stuff interviewing three guys, and I'm not traditional media anyway. I wasn't trained in it, so it'd just be kind of a waste of our company's money to send me down there. But once practice opens, I'll be over there full-fledged.
Yeah, see, I would go, but I don't think my old beaten-up car would make it all the way to North Carolina. That's kind of my problem that I'm going through.